Translation. One day, after finishing their morning duties by burning a sacrificial fire and offering a seat of esteem to Srila Suta Goswami, the great sages made inquiries with great respect about the following matters. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Morning is the best time to hold spiritual services. The great sages offered the speaker of the Bhagavatam an elevated seat of respect called the Vyasasan, or the seat of Srila Vyasadeva. Sri Vyasadeva is the original spiritual preceptor for all men, and all other preceptors are considered to be his representatives. A representative is one who can exactly present the viewpoint of Sri Vyasadeva. Sri Vyasadeva impregnated the message of Bhagavatam unto Srila Shukadeva Goswami, and Sri Suta Goswami heard it from him, Sri Shukadeva Goswami. All bona fide representatives of Sri Vyasadeva in the chain of disciplic succession are to be understood to be Goswamis. These Goswamis restrain all their senses and they stick to the path made by the previous Acharyas. The Goswamis do not deliver lectures on the Bhagavatam capriciously. Rather, they execute their services most carefully, following their predecessors who delivered the spiritual message unbroken to them. Those who listen to the Bhagavatam may put questions to the speaker in order to elicit the clear meaning, but this should not be done in a challenging spirit. One must submit questions with a great regard for the speaker and the subject matter. This is also the way recommended in Bhagavad Gita. One must learn the transcendental subject by submissive oral reception from the right sources. Therefore, these sages address the speaker, Suta Goswami, with great respect. Ta ekada tu munayaha pratur huta hutagnayaha satkritam sutam asinam paprachuridam adarat. One day, after finishing their morning duties by burning a sacrificial fire and offering a seat of esteem to Srila Suta Goswami, the great sages made inquiries with great respect about the following matters. Amagyana tamrindasya gyananjana shalakya chakshur militamina tasmai shri gurave namaha. Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastai Bhutale Srimate Shivaram Swam Nitanamine. Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastai Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminita Namine. Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Prashkita Deshtarne. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam. When will Rupa Goswami, who has established within this material world the mission to fulfill the desire of Lord Chaitanya, give me shelter at his lotus feet? Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam udirayat. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, one should first offer their humble obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, unto Naranarayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Sarasvati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. Nashtaprayashu Bhadrashu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Ratamashloke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtaki. By regular attendance in the classes on the Bhagavatam and by rendering service unto the pure devotees, all that is troublesome in the heart becomes almost completely destroyed, and transcendental service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental hymns, becomes established as an irrevocable fact. Vande Shri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Sahodito Godadaya Pushpanvanto Chitro Shando Tamonado. I offer my humble obeisances unto Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, who have risen simultaneously over the horizon of Godadesh, just like the sun and the moon, to dissipate the darkness of ignorance and to wonderfully bestow benediction upon all. So I noticed in the purport that it's recommending that lectures on the Bhagavatam not be delivered capriciously, and that the person giving a lecture on the Bhagavatam execute their service most carefully, following their predecessors who delivered the spiritual message unbroken to them. So I seek the goodwill of the learned audience so that I don't fall contrary to this instruction. First point I'd like to bring up is that Prabhupada opens the purport with this point that morning is the best time to hold spiritual services. It's often remarked that when Prabhupada writes his purports, that the first sentence is very pregnant with meaning. So I think this applies here also. Morning is the best time to hold spiritual services. We know that the three modes of material nature are all pervading throughout this material universe. And we see that in the morning is the mode of goodness, and then as the day gets on, we have the mode of passion, transitions into mode of passion, and then in the evening, as darkness descends, we have the mode of ignorance. So everything's very scientific in the Vedic paradigm, in the Vedic culture. And everything is very hierarchical, extremely hierarchical, so that it is possible to discriminate between qualities so that we can say that something is good and something is bad. And that's something that in the modern world is that distinction is becoming blurred, and people's ability to discriminate between good and bad is becoming less and less pronounced. But in the Vedic paradigm, it's just very clear because everything's so hierarchical. And the whole culture is one of the key points of understanding how this principle works is to understand how respect is operating in the Vedic paradigm. This verse is describing how the sages, they made these inquiries with great respect, and they placed Suta Goswami on this elevated seat so that they could honor him. It's not just respect, it becomes like an honoring of this person. So there's a purpose for everything in the Vedic system. First of all, we have to look at the overall purpose. Why are they meeting? Because these great sages, they're visionaries, and they're able to see that Kali Yuga is approaching. And they're able to see that people are going to suffer a great deal in the Kali Yuga. I heard Bhakti Vidyapuram? No, it was Danadhara Maharaj. Danadhara Swami, he made this point that he asked the question, who is a sage? What is it that makes a person a sage? So his answer to that question was that a sage is a person who simply desires to fulfill the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Someone who knows how to do it and who also desires to do it, to fulfill the will of God. And then we can ask ourselves then, what is the will of God? And the answer is, the will of God is that everybody be happy, because that's the nature of God. That everybody is experiencing their true identity as being his parts and parcels, Satchitananda, complete with their eternal existence, with their awareness of who they are, their individuality completely intact as it had been given to them by Krishna, and their happiness is also there fully extant. That's what Krishna's will is. So a sage is somebody who's trying to implement Krishna's will, God's will. That is a sage. And so when the sages could see Kali Yuga approaching and people becoming divorced from their Satchitananda identities, then they decided that they would perform this yajna in order to invoke auspiciousness and to... That's their contribution to helping turn the tide of Kali Yuga and to help as many fallen conditioned souls as possible from, you know, the plight of this fallen age. The Bhagavatam states that prayanalpayashashabdaha kalivasmin yuge janaha mandasamanda matayo mandabhagya hupadritaha, that in this fallen age of Kali, men have but short lives. They're quarrelsome, they're lazy, they're misguided, unlucky, and always disturbed. So that's a very clear description of the state of people in this Kali Yuga. So they're doing this sacrifice in the morning. This is the most auspicious time. This is the time when spiritual practices have their greatest power and potency. So therefore they're performing it at this time. And in the purport, it's mentioning that he's going to be speaking at this yajna, Suta Goswami, but it's mentioning in this purport that Suta Goswami heard from Shukadev Goswami, and that Shukadev Goswami has been impregnated with this Siddhanta, this Vedic Siddhanta, by Srila Vyasadeva. So this is now, we're talking here about the disciplic succession. Srila Vyasadeva has empowered Shukadev Goswami to deliver this Bhagavatam. Again, in one lecture I heard from Dandadas Swami, he was making this point about how when you have to communicate an understanding of a subject, this requires that you understand the subject in order to be able to communicate it. You must understand it very, very thoroughly. And he quoted Prabhupada saying that a 15-minute lecture on a subject is equivalent to the value of studying for hours on end, because you will get more realization in 15 minutes of trying to explain a subject, more realization that will, you know, of how much you know and how much you don't know, both, in that 15 minutes than what you will gain from reading for so many hours. Because when you explain something, you need to find words to convey the meaning. And it also depends on the audience that you're speaking to. So sometimes, you know, with a particular audience, you need a certain set of words, and with a different audience, you need a different set of words. So it's a very dynamic process, the process of communication. And it's not a matter of just making it up or figuring it out. You have to actually receive that knowledge. And as it says here, pass it down intact. And it says you have to exactly present the viewpoint of the disciplic succession. It doesn't mean that you simply, you know, dogmatically recite the same statements, because it's not meant to work like that. You're meant to actually assimilate it and realize that knowledge and then be able to explain it in your own words and in your own style. And in order to be able to do that, this principle of respect has to be there, because someone, you're not going to receive knowledge unless you approach a superior person with respect. And there's this dynamic, there is a dynamic relationship between spiritual master and disciple, and that entails respect going upwards to the spiritual master, and then affection coming down from the spiritual master to the disciple. So when I say affection coming down from the spiritual master to the disciple, that is the greater umbrella, because underneath that is also just the technical knowledge and the etiquette and all of these points of Siddhanta. That's also coming down. That's also contained within the affection. Because the ultimate conclusion of the Vedas is love for Krishna. It's not that we become scholars or academics. The ultimate conclusion is that we develop this love for Krishna. And that's why it says in the Mahabharata that... I can't think of the context, but dharmasya tatvam nihitam guhayam mahajno yenigatasa panta. That the solid truth of religious principles is hidden in the heart of the pure devotee. And therefore we should follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, mahajano, of the mahajans. But it's saying that it's in the heart. So it's not in the head, it's in the heart. And just as the gopis are perfect examples, that they don't know who Krishna is technically, that he's God. They're not aware of that. They just have this pure love, and that makes them the greatest devotees. Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda ki jai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai. They have absolutely no envy for Krishna. They just have pure love for Krishna. I was hearing recently how when Krishna and the gopis are having their pastimes, sometimes they'll play games together, and the winner amongst the gopis, the winner of the game, will get to kiss Krishna. And in this one occasion, Radharani won the game, but then she thought, this is all the mystical pastimes of the spiritual world. She thought, if one of the aboriginal girls kiss Krishna, then it'll give him greater pleasure than if I do. So then she summoned this aboriginal girl to do it. So there's no envy there. It's just this pure love for Krishna. Any sacrifice. This principle of sacrifice means that we set aside our own agenda for the greater good, for the greater benefit. Just as we started talking about these sages, they're performing this yajna because they're thinking selflessly. And the ironic thing is that when you think selflessly, then you're actually gaining for yourself the greatest profit. Because this is like the irony of life. People who think, I just want something for myself here, people who are egocentric and who are selfish, They actually don't benefit themselves at all. Quite the contrary. They just entangle themselves in bondage and entangle themselves in karma. And, you know, this person who they're so much trying to benefit, they're disconnecting from actually who they are. They're losing touch with their identity. Because what is their identity? Their identity is that they're, by constitution, a servant. So there's this irony there. And the greatest irony is that we're all here in the material world because we wanted to be Krishna. We thought this is how we're going to gain our greatest benefit. We can become the supreme enjoyer and the supreme controller. If only we could pull this off, that would be my supreme benefit. I could become God. And then what happens is we simply, in that endeavor, we lose this principle of love. And rather than being situated in the heart, we become situated in the head. Because it becomes, we have to, if you're going to try and be somebody else, you have to be constantly calculating how to do that and measuring yourself against the person you're trying to be. It's a totally mental exercise. Whereas when you're being yourself, then you're just doing what's naturally. You're doing what comes naturally. But what's happened, though, is that we've already done this foolish act of made the attempt to be Krishna. Now, and the question is asked, you know, why did we leave the spiritual world? And really the answer is, there is no good reason why we left the spiritual world. You know, on one level, we left the spiritual world because we wanted to be Krishna. And so Krishna created this material world. I remember once Sachinandan Maharaj, he said the first time he met Prabhupada, he asked him this audacious question. And he said, he asked him, he put his hand up during question time and he said something to the effect that, you know, if God is all loving, then why is there evil in the world? And Prabhupada, Sachinanda Maharaj said, was quite strident in his answer, and he said, God did not create evil, you created evil. You created it. Meaning to say that this material world would not exist if it wasn't for these, if it wasn't for this envy of Krishna and this, and if it wasn't for this foolishness and insanity of trying to be someone that we're not, then this material world would not even exist. In the Bhagavad Gita, it says, "Janma mrityu jara vyadi, dukkha doshana darshanam." So it's making a point that to be intelligent and to be wise is to understand the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease. The evil of birth, death, old age, and disease. So it is true. You know, evil is not God's creation. But if he's giving free will to the living entities, and if the living entities misuse their free will and start to, one thing leads to another, and then finally you have this result that is evil, then that's how evil comes about. Okay, so these are just some points to consider, and I usually kind of talk all the way up to 8:30, and then there's no time for questions. So if there are any questions or any comments, then we have time now.